It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. You know, I was watching a very inspirational video this morning, and it shows a toddler ranging from the age of 2 to 3, and this little man, a little boy, along with his father, with the help of his father, he's doing these very incredible acrobatic demonstrations, these of agility and strength. Okay, he is, I think they call it free climbing. He's doing these backflips. He's just incredible to watch. My point being is, the incredible things that we can accomplish when, A, we believe it, right? And this young boy, because he doesn't know fear and he doesn't know doubt, and he's getting the help from his father or his mentor, who he believes in wholeheartedly, is accomplishing these crazy acrobatic feats. So I'm not really sure who said it, but I think it was Napoleon Hill. Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it will achieve, right? It's an incredible, incredible gift that we have, that we can become whatever we choose to. We can accomplish whatever we want to if we, you know, if we can just believe in ourselves, right? If we have some... And if by chance we have somebody, a mentor, a father, a friend, a mother who believes in and believes in us, then, again, that helps. It really makes a huge difference. So it's an incredible, incredible thing what happens, again, with that little simple thing of belief. And again, how much faster we're able to grow and go when we have somebody showing us the way. Which leads me to my first guest, Tom Hopkins. Tom Hopkins is a regular contributor here. And Tom Hopkins, in my opinion, started the whole sales training industry. This is a guy that if you were in sales, if you hope to be a sales speaker, a sales trainer, a sales motivator, you had Tom Hopkins material, Tom Hopkins books in your library. Tom Hopkins carries the standard as a master sales trainer and is recognized as the world's leading authority on selling techniques and salesmanship. Over 5 million people on 5 continents have attended Tom's high-energy live seminars. Tom personally conducts 30-plus seminars each year, traveling throughout the world. He is the author of 18 books, including How to Master the Art of Selling, which has sold over 1.6 million copies. His latest book, When Buyers Say No, is also receiving phenomenal acclaim. Tom Hopkins, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Well, Bert, so nice to always join you, and thank you for those kind words. So good to be with you.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. And, you know, one of the things that I know you're a big fan of is role playing. You talk about it in your books. You talk about it in your live seminars. There is something that happens to us when we practice the result that we want to achieve.
Oh, so definitely true. And, you know, it's so interesting about your comments that you started with about the little boy. Because as I was reflecting on our time that we're going to share this morning, I thought, you know, I just have to remember back as we talk about this subject of success and achievement and so forth, how I was, you know, as you know, we've been friends for years besides us doing this type of thing. But, you know, I'm rather short of stature. I'm a short person. And I was always the smallest one in my class back in school. And I think because of that, I tried to overcompensate. And I think I really had a pretty strong ego, which there's nothing wrong with a good, strong ego. But I also think I got really kind of cocky, Bert. And I was kind of a – cocky kid. And I'll never forget, talk about a mentor. My father called me in one day. I think I was just becoming a teenager. And he said, "Tom, I want you to know something. I've been watching you as you've getting a little older, how you're kind of a smart aleck, kind of a overbearing, cocky kid." And he said, "People don't like that. And I think you really need to work on humility and being more gracious." And so, you know, what's amazing, just like that little two-year-old you were talking about, that hit me like a sledgehammer, Bert, the concept of humility rather than being egotistical. And I really believe that that is a major part of success, is being gracious and humble. I just got back. I took a trip around the world, as you, I think, know. And it was amazing to see the crowds and in China, how they love our training. And, I mean, it was just, I kept pinching myself to think of what's happened in my life. And then I always come back to that truth that be grateful, and gratefulness is so important, and be humble in spirit. And so I thought, you know, I'd kind of share that with you this morning, that successful people, I think, don't come across egotistically, even though they have a nice, strong ego, if that makes any sense.
Yes. Yeah, you know what, and look, let's talk about ego. You look at somebody like Muhammad Ali, recently passed away,
right.
And I think that this guy shocked the world because he was so boisterous with his grand egotistical stuff, right? He would say, "I'm the greatest, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that." And I think that there was, like a lot of us in the entertainment industry, we'd call it in the public eye, you had two personas. So you had Muhammad Ali, the boxer, who was loud, and he really wanted to wake people up and challenge people. He had this massive ego, and people called him conceited and arrogant, but he was able to back it up with results. And then when you know, and not that I knew the man privately, but from what I understand, that people who did know him privately, he was a different guy. He was a little bit more, what do you call it? He was still conservative. He was very grateful. You mentioned the word grateful. He was very grateful, very and humble to an extent. He wasn't this loud, obnoxious guy that he was when he was in front of the cameras. That was for show. But it's okay to have an ego, and it's okay to be obnoxious, but you have to be able to back it up. Your thoughts?
Yes, so true. So true. Great, great point. And, of course, you're beginning with the quote, you know, what the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve is so, so important, that success starts, I think, with you starting to believe in yourself, and then, of course, becoming very service-oriented to the people that you serve, in essence, in your business. And I think the most successful people I've met are tremendous servants to their fellow man, and they love helping other people, which I think is, again, what your show does with the people you bring to your listeners, which is, again,
sure,
a very service to your fellow man attitude.
Yes. Well, you know what, and I think that there's nothing wrong, and I want to clarify this, because I think that, again, look at what you do. You've literally served millions of people. You've inspired people. You've helped people with your books, your seminars, your audios. And there's nothing wrong with getting compensated for helping other people. I know that you also do, you've helped charities and things of that nature as well. You know, and I think that sometimes people get confused as to when they hear the word, you know, serving others. It doesn't mean serving others to your detriment. If you can do it for free, great. But we're not all in the position, you know, we're not all, you know, we'd call it like the Rockefellers, who are able to serve freely. But and a lot of people forget that Rockefeller spent the first half of his life, or most of his life, earning that money, creating that wealth, to put him in a position where later on he was able to do a lot of things for free. He was able to create a lot of charities. The Kennedys did the same thing. And so I think that whether you're getting paid for it or you're doing it for free, serving your man, making life better, making your community better, making your world better, I think is hugely satisfying.
Oh, so true. And I have a little statement that I kind of teach my people that come to my training. First of all, you've got to educate yourself, which I say it this way. Learn more, so then you'll be able to serve more. Then you'll be able to make more. Then you'll be able to save more. And then the highlight is when you are able to give more. And if you think about that concept of wanting to be at a point in your life when you can give to your fellow man, or you can give to charity, or you can help your family, your brothers, your sisters, and I'm sure everyone listening has someone in their life that has gone through financial challenges, and boy, is it nice to be able to say, look, here's a check, let me just help you out of this little mess you're in. And so the giving is the best part of it, but it starts with the serving first.
Yes. And I want to focus on something that you said that sometimes is seldom discussed in our success philosophies, our motivational arenas, even at the dinner table. And that is, you mentioned save more. And I think that America has gotten away from saving, and it's all about, you know, showing off what they have or what we have. And I think that again, if you save more, and when I'm thinking of saving more, part of that is, yes, have money in the bank, but also put money in your investments. But when you save more, like you said, it puts you in the position where you can give more. You can give more of your time, you can give more of your money, you can give, you know, more of your attention to some of these events that are happening around your community or around the world. There's a gentleman that I know who is doing everything he can to eradicate the drought in India. And the reason he can do that is because he's got enough wealth, he's got enough investment income, enough passive income, where he no longer worries about money. He can now focus on helping his community.
And that's, I think, when you really arrive as far as this thing called success.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know what, and I want to talk about this, because I think success, like a lot of things in life, I want to say like everything in life, I think is 95% mental, right? It's our thoughts, it's our attitude. And, you know, you've been around, you've seen it all, you have a lot of experience, and so I want to get your thoughts on this, and that is, some people call them incantations, other people call them self-talk, affirmations, are you a believer in self-talk or affirmations, incantations, things of that nature to help train our minds?
Oh, definitely. In fact, you know, I even have this little thing, and it's called a shower card. It's made of plastic, and of course I have people that hang it in their showers, and I think doing two things at once is really important. So most people don't even think when they're taking their shower or bath, so they can read or say things to, again, increase their attitude there. And so I do believe in the positive affirmations. I call it self-talk. And, you know, just like today, I will meet the right people at the right time for the betterment of all. Today, I will serve more, so I will be able to earn more, thus to give more. And I think these type of things are really important for us. And so I am a firm believer, Bert, in self-talk, affirmations. You know, if you think a thought that then comes out of your mouth and back into your ear, you're really impacting your mind in a very good way.
Yes, I agree. And what's interesting, a lot of us, I think a lot of us don't understand that we're doing this all the time. You know, we're driving in our car, and we're either having a positive conversation with ourselves, or we're having a negative one. And a lot of people, just because it happens so naturally and so kind of low, you know, below the radar, they don't catch themselves having this conversation. And so the reason I love affirmations, your idea of having it in the shower, the bath, hanging it on doors, on your rearview mirror, things of that nature, is because it helps us to recognize the conversation and also to direct it in a positive way that's going to help us get closer to our goals.
Definitely. I mean, that's right on, Bert, just right on.
You know, in what do you call it? I have not met somebody who's successful, whether it's an athlete or a what do you call it, a businessman or whatever, a best-selling
entrepreneur.
Entrepreneur, thank you, who does not have, what do you call it, some way of directing and controlling their thoughts.
Oh, definitely. I mean, every athlete has a ritual before they go to the competitive field. Some of them, I remember back when I played football, you know, some of our linemen would sit and they'd meditate. Others might be praying. Then there'd be some guys smacking each other's pads and getting adrenaline flowing. So I think success is also part of getting your adrenaline pumped up for the day. So from the moment you start your day, you're excited about your life and excited about what you do in your business career.
Yes, yes. And that leads me to this other thing that I'm glad you brought in, rituals, because, again, I love, call it whatever you want, psyching yourself up, your ritual, you know, getting hyped up, whatever you call it. Right before I do my show, I got to get in, what do you call it? I got to get in state, if you will. I got to bring my energy up. The same thing when I go in front of, you know, when I go to speak on stage or something like that, there is a certain level of, what's the word I'm looking for, a certain level of energy that you need to succeed. And I think that when you get physical about it, when you hype your body up, you know, maybe jumping up and down, or you mentioned, you know, smacking each other's pads or a high five, this energy helps you with your thoughts and helps move you forward. And I think that, again, there's so many people that misunderstand that. They talk about, well, you know, I don't want to go through the rah-rah stuff. But that rah-rah stuff is just kind of lighting the pilot, so to speak, in my opinion. I want to get your thoughts on this. You kind of get the day started with a little rah-rah, and because of this energy, you know, you're smiling bigger, you're feeling better, and so your thinking is better. What do you think?
Definitely. In fact, you know, when I start a seminar, normally I have the people kind of say, let's get kind of psyched up. And I talk about athletes having rituals and things and they do. And I have these little things. I have them say, I'm alive, I'm awake, and I feel great. And I have them put their hands up. And, of course, I don't believe that motivation is the whole key to success. It's part of it. But I have them do this. You know, I feel good, I feel fine, I feel this way all the time. And these little sayings, I get them kind of pumped up with. And then I ask them, I say, hey, start for, and it takes 21 days to define a habit, to create a discipline. And so I say to them, if you'll just start for 21 mornings, just by saying those two little things, I'm alive, I'm awake, and I feel great, I feel good, I feel fine, I feel this way all the time. Do this in the shower, and you watch how you'll start walking out of that shower with a little more adrenaline pumping, more energy, more excitement for the day.
Yes, absolutely. And this is, I'm going to use this, and some people may consider this a negative example, but if you remember the O.J. Simpson trial, this guy, meaning his defense attorney, got up there. I can't remember his name now, but he's passed away as well. And he got up there and he said, look, if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. That little simple affirmation and everything else stuck in people's minds. To this day, I remember it. The jury got tickled about it. It makes a big difference in your life. It makes a big difference how we say things. And I like these little rhymes that you put together, because you know, it's an affirmation, but it's one that's fun to say and it's easy to remember. So I think that that is elements of making this stuff work. It's no different than a little jingle that we hear or, oh my goodness, the Disney song, Tom, what is it? It's a small world after all. Once you hear that, it sticks in your head forever.
Oh,
it takes you a day
I know,
to get rid
I go
of
to,
it.
When I took the kids to Disneyland, I couldn't get that song out of my brain for days. Oh, that's funny, Bert, but it's so true. You know, we are a product of what we think and then what we say, and then the actions follow the thoughts and the words.
Yes, yes, absolutely. All right, so let me ask you this, because a lot of people don't know this about you, and I didn't know this until we got a chance to do this interview, video interview, film interview there at your home, that you basically started your career in construction. And tell everybody, here you are a construction worker, you're lugging around this I-beam, we have this on footage, and then how did you go, or I should say better, why did you go from being a construction worker into a salesperson?
Well, I was very fortunate to have some good advice. My dad was so disappointed when I quit college after 90 days. He literally said I'd never amount to anything, which, again, was a motivational point for me because I said, I'll prove it. And luckily, after a year of carrying steel on bridge decks, I said, I got to do something else. And my dad suggested I get a real estate license. And, of course, I failed my real estate exam 3 times. And the 4th time, I finally passed. And real estate sales, to me, was my niche. I didn't start off successful, but again, I found mentors, I found people that I listened to, I went to many seminars, listened to back then records and then cassettes, and all of a sudden, I found my niche and was able to, you know, sell many, many homes, make a lot of money, and that's kind of how it started. But that's why I do tell my people at my seminars that based on my background, if I could become, what, quote, a successful person, I think anybody can. But they do have to find mentors. They have to have people to give them advice. They have to be students of the art of success. And they have to live a disciplined life. And they have to, you know, learn what successful people do and then emulate them.
Yes. Absolutely. And you know, what's interesting too is, and we're short on time, so we're not going to be able to get into this, but what I love about your story is that, you know, that not only did you fail the, we'd call it the real estate exam a couple of times, but you didn't have a car when you started in the real estate business. You had a motorcycle.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't have a car. People would have to follow me on my bike. And then, of course, if they didn't like the house, they'd try to lose me, and I would try to chase them. And, yeah, I mean, that's why I stand. I didn't have a suit. I had a band uniform because I was a drummer in a band when I was 16. And so we had these wild silver LeMay band uniforms, and that's the only thing I had to wear. So, I mean, I had a lot going against me. And that's why when people are taking advice like from you, they have to realize that, hey, find a mentor, learn what they did, and just emulate them. And find someone to copy, because I think successful people started off copying someone else till they develop their own strength, their own disciplines, and so forth.
Yes, their own, their own brand, if you will, right?
That's right, Yes.
I love it, Tom. It's always good to have you on the show. We're out of time. Stay cool there in Flagstaff. It's always, like I said, it's always good to have you on the show. And if you guys want to find out about Tom Hopkins, if you want to get some more of his audios or his books or maybe attend his next seminar, you can go to tomhopkins.com. That's where everybody can go to find out more about Tom and he's got all sorts of audios there, books, training programs, Tom Hopkins, tomhopkins.com. Tom, thank you so much for stopping by.
All the best, Bert. Thanks. Thank you to all of you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Good stuff there from my friend Tom Hopkins, international best-selling author, and like I said, the guy who started the whole sales industry. We're going to take a quick commercial break. and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite.
Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Richard Serber. Richard Serber is actually an old friend of mine. We haven't talked in many years, but another lifetime ago, we worked together in Salt Lake City. And, you know, this is one of the sharpest guys I've ever met. And interestingly enough, I'll just catch up. Richard Serber is currently the CEO of Sack Lunch Productions. As CEO, director, and controlling shareholder of Sack Lunch Productions. By the way, this is publicly traded as SAKL. So it's publicly traded as SAKL. Richard Serber is the driving, dynamic, innovative force in the world of event production and management and film production. Guided by Serber's visionary expertise, Sack Lunch Productions, its branded events, event franchises, and feature-length films maintain a global presence and literally reaches millions of people each year. His insight has created experience-oriented entertainment that taps into the intrinsic need to revisit the wonder and awe of childhood. I love that. Richard Serber, welcome to Money for Lunch.
That's quite the introduction. I appreciate that. Thanks, Bert. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here. It's good to catch up a little bit. So, all right, so tell me, what is Sack Lunch Productions all about? What is it that you guys are doing?
Well, we're an event production, event management, and it's fun-based events. So I think everybody is aware of the 5K or the marathon or half marathon or the triathlon event. Well, what we have is currently four different brands, and I'll describe them in order of size. So the largest event is Slide the City. And what we do with Slide the City is we set up a 1,000-foot slip and slide. You know, it's loosely based on, you know, what your kids probably do in their backyard, just on a much grander scale, right? And we put those in, you know, down highly visible city streets. And it's a block party on the street, essentially. And I think it predominantly appeals to, you know, millennials that value experiences over things. And I think the same thing can be said for the other three brands that we have as well. So the next one is called Call Me Rad, and it's a 5K color run. And it's loosely based on the Hindu festival of colors. Where, and it's, again, rather than competition, it's more fun-based. And if you went to one of those events, you'd probably predominantly see, you know, mothers and daughters participating in that one. And that that event, like Slide the City, we host that throughout North America. We're very large in Canada, and we have some international franchise systems set up there as well. The third event is called the Lantern Fest, and essentially, what that is, you know, we get anywhere between probably 2,000 to 12,000 participants showing up in a designated spot, and they set off sky lanterns into the night sky, and it is a pretty spectacular sight. And of course, there's live music, s'mores, and entertainment as well. So it's a light festival, and there's a real emotional connection, I think, to the people that participate in that one. The smallest event is called Dirty Dash, and it's a 5K mud run obstacle course. And, I mean, a lot of people have seen Spartan and some of the more intense mud runs where it's competition-based and, you know, no pain, no gain type thing. Again, this is more family-oriented and fun, and anybody can do it. And it's about fun, not about winning. So that's... it's kind of a general overview of what Sack Lunch Productions is predominantly doing right now and some of its brands.
I love it. I love it. You know, what I like about these four different brands is that everything you talked about, first of all, it is fund-based versus competition-based. Second of all, like I said in the introduction, it's about revisiting that wonder and that awe of childhood. And it sounds like all four of these is family-oriented and a great way to connect with your family or with friends or, you know, bring the office and kind of have a unique office experience, because it's really about building memories and emotional ties.
Exactly. And I think that the reason why we just started this thing really in earnest in 2015. And I think the reason why it's been why it's resonated and why it's such a success is because it predominantly does appeal to the millennials. And like I said before, I think what a lot of millennial generation is about is experiencing things versus things. And you couple that with the social media aspect, where everybody has their iPhone or Android, you know, out there. And I think, you know, a lot of times they're trying to one-up, you know, their friends.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting, you know, for them to post, you know, video photographs of these kind of wild events and basically, you know, be able to share how their weekend might have been better or was just, you know, really fun. And that's what we saw with Slide the City. I mean, the initial promo video went viral. I think there's probably somewhere around 7 million views, you know, that
nice.
Piece alone. So.
Yeah, see, now what I want to talk about this, because people are always asking, you know, how do you make a viral video, or how do you make a video go viral? And when you look at the Slide in the City video, it's fun. You want to be part of that. So I don't think there's a specific formula for having a video go viral. It just has to be good. It has to be entertaining. It has to be, you know, it has to capture the emotions of people. And Slide the City does that. That video had no chance but to go viral because it's a lot of fun to watch.
It's a ton of fun to watch. I mean, you know, cute kids, you know, doing dances and sincerely enjoying themselves. And, you know, who can't relate, you know, to the slip and slide in their backyard,
right,
on a grand scale, you know, coupled with drones, you know, filming from above, you know, giving an interesting vantage point. And then I think the soundtrack that goes with it's really catchy too. So.
Absolutely. And it is an awesome video. All right. So let's talk about this. You mentioned that Sack Lunch Productions just really in earnest started this. Talk about some of your major milestones over the last 6 to 12 months.
Well, August 7th, we acquired an entity called Springbok Holdings. And Springbok Holdings is the owner of the Colony Rad event, the Dirty Dash event. And they had purchased the rights to operate, I think it was up to 40 Slide the City events in various markets throughout the United States and Canada. So we took them over on August 7th. So that was a huge leg up for the company. And then also in 2015, we were able to create the franchise system for Slide the City. And then from 2015 to 2016, we were essentially able to double the number of events. We're in the process of getting the company audited. At this point, which we'll probably have that completed by end of 2016, and you know, as part of that acquisition process, we were able to obtain an equity line of credit of up to $5 million. We drew down the initial $1.8 million in order to effect the acquisition, and we're in the process of creating some additional fund-based events, and we're also I have the irons in the fire for some acquisitions as well. So some pretty major things, you know, have happened over the last 12 months, which is basically, you know, setting the stage for the future.
Man, that sounds exciting. And what is so nice about this from a business standpoint of view is, as you mentioned, some of the numbers that are involved in these events are large numbers. And so you're building this database of people who like events, who like to have fun, and there's just almost an endless amount of products that you can promote to these people, endless amount of events, as long as it includes having fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're in the business. We're in the business of selling fun. I mean, so like the database, the email database alone at this point is probably around 4 million participants that we tap into. And if you went to, you know, the Call Me Your Ad, let's say, Facebook page, you're going to see, I think, close to 2 million followers just on that one Facebook page. So, I mean, we have, you know, potential captive audience of probably maybe as many as 6-7 million, you know, people. If you looked at, you know, the stats with regard to how many people are visiting the Slide the City webpage, for instance, I think, you know, I mean, during peak times, I think 150,000, you know, impressions in a day, you know, occur on the web, on that website. So lots of eyeballs on this, and it is very scalable,
absolutely
right. So
right, and you know, look at the video. The video alone did over 7 million. It's still growing, 7 million plus views. That's a lot of eyeballs. Then you have a couple of million on Facebook, a couple of million here, 4 million in your database. That's literally tens of millions of eyeballs. Here's what's so interesting, and of course I'm dating myself. Back in the day, a network would love to have 5, 6, 10 million eyeballs. And here, you know, Sack Lunch has, as you mentioned, millions of eyeballs and getting bigger all the time, as you said, selling fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, we are on track. I mean, we've kind of revised our forecast. So I think we're on track this year to do 17.1 million, you know, in gross revenues. So, and I think right now we're only trading at 8 cents. So, it's just a really exciting time for the company.
You look at that. Yeah, maybe a good time for somebody to look at that and see if it's a worthwhile investment for their portfolio. Let's talk about this real quick, Richard. What do you think makes Sack Lunch events unique? What is the company's long-term potential in this event space? Talk about that.
Well, I think the thing that makes it unique, which I've kind of mentioned, you know, a little bit earlier in the show, is that there's a nostalgic element to most of the events. It's fun-based. You have the millennial, you know, segment of the market that's really hot on experiencing things versus, you know, versus purchasing things. We're in a position, you know, in the event market, which globally I think is about a $20 billion. Market currently, it's fragmented as well, and I think
right.
one of the only public company production companies out there, you know, at this point. So I think we're unique, you know, across the, you know, all those elements. The appeal to millennials, the fact that we're public, the fact that there's not that many other, very few other event production companies that are, you know, in the spaces that we are, and all the events that we have are, at least Slide the City and Lantern Fest, I think, are very unique. So.
Yeah, I love Slide the City, and I think Lantern Festival?
Lantern Festival, yeah.
I think that's a very unique, what a multiple opportunities there to have a fun time with the family or a romantic date or whatever. It's a fun event, and I think as we've already talked about, Slide the City just captures that imagination or brings you back in time depending on where you're at. So it's just something that's going to be fun. And what's so nice about the events that you've described and the fact that their focus is on fun and not competition, that anybody at whatever physical level or fitness level can participate.
That's 100% right. So it is not,
all right,
it's not based on, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I think that makes it important because, again, you know, I love Spartan Race. I'm getting ready for my second Spartan Race, but that is very, you know, competitive focused, right? And even though I do have fun, I'm also, I'm more, you know, I'm just as focused or I, let me rephrase it, I'm more focused on trying to beat my friends than I'm just, you know, than just having fun. So it's just a different mindset, not one, and I think that that's a nice little difference. Let's talk about this. Let's look at your current investment case. If I was looking to invest in Sack Lunch, what would you tell me? What are some of the main points of Sack Lunch Productions that you would want to make to an investor?
You know, I have to say explosive growth. I mean, the growth prospects are amazing. Scalability, there's an international appeal. We're in the business of selling fun, which in turn creates an emotional tie with our participants. And I think what our participants and probably most investors don't know is that all of our popular events, like I said earlier, are held by a public company. So that isn't really broadcast, at least at this level, to any of the participants or anything of that sort. So we're relatively unknown at this point. Like I said, you know, if you looked at where we're trading at right now, we're only trading at 8 cents per share. And considering what we've done so far and where we're headed, you know, our market cap of, I guess we're probably somewhere around $12 million today, at least in my opinion, is an incredible bargain. So, and we also have access to tremendous amounts of built-in visibility. You know, there'll be millions of, you know, onlookers as a result of how we, you know, position the Slide the City events, the news coverage we get, so on and so forth. Like I said earlier, we have over probably 4 million social media followers, an email database that comes close to that number as well. We have tons of compelling, great video content that, you know, much of which continues to go viral. And, you know, my hope is it's only a matter of time before we become a household word. So I'd say that, you know, now is the time to jump on board with Sack Lunch Productions.
Sure, sure. You know what, and again, look, here's what's kind of neat, and I think what really really positions yourself kind of in a very unique way. All of us as business owners would love somebody doing videos about us, right? I mean, if you and I go out to have lunch or a dinner, we're not going to probably do a video about dinner, no matter how good it was, no matter how great the food was, the great service. Chances are we're not going to make a video about our experience at dinner or even at the gym or racquetball or anything like that. But at the Dirty Dash or Slide the City or the Lantern Festival, we're absolutely going to make a video about that. You're going to have participants spreading your brand internationally for free, building goodwill, building visibility. That's tons of free marketing that you can't put a price on.
That's right. I mean, you just nailed it, Bert. You nailed it. So, I mean, and I think that's what's so compelling. Rather than have some, you know, corporate entity or, you know, some polished, you know, ad firm trying to shove, you know, advertisements down your throat, the participants do it for you, you know, and it's authentic. There's an authentic, you know,
yes,
authentic nature, you know, to it that's more compelling, quite frankly.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, word of mouth. Word of mouth is still the best form of advertising or the best form of marketing, and that's what you guys have in spades there. Richard, we're out of time. Would love to bring you back and talk more about Sack Lunch Productions. And again, for you guys who are interested and you want to check it out, see if it's a good fit for your portfolio, you can check them out at SAKL on the pink sheets. Richard Serber, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Hey, thank you, Bert. Have a good one.
All righty. Good stuff there from Richard Serber, CEO of Sack Lunch Productions. And Slide the City, what a great event. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, What if I told you I only use one hand?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
It's just so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, former FBI behavioral analyst Jack Schaefer. As I mentioned, Jack Schaefer is a retired behavioral analyst for the FBI's National Security Division. Jack is currently a professor teaching law enforcement at Western Illinois University. He is the author of The Like Switch, an ex-FBI agent's guide to influencing, attracting, and winning people over. The Like Switch is published now in 14 languages. Jack Schaefer, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. All right, so what I love about this book, and I just got it, so I haven't been able to really dive deep into it, so we may have to bring you back and talk more about it. But bottom line, the book talks about people listen to people they like and can be persuaded to take a course of action by people they like. People negotiate with people they like, and I thought about that, and that's so true, right? Because if you don't like somebody, you're not going to negotiate. So you got to like them and share common ground. And then, of course, people buy things from people they like. And so, in essence, the like switch is about becoming more likable so you can accomplish all these things.
Yeah, basically what it does is it takes all the things that we normally do when we meet people and we develop friendships and relationships. And what I've done is identified all those things we do by instinct. And I've given it a name and some variables, and I've identified the specific techniques. That way people can actually go into a meeting or a relationship and intentionally use these things to develop friendships rather than rely on instinct. Because those are the normal things that we do when we meet people. And all I've done is identify. And most people, when we get into relationships and we talk to people, we don't know really what we're doing. We're just doing it. But it would be great if you go into negotiations or a sales meeting and you can intentionally say, I want to project this image that I like you, that I'm not a threat to you. We find common ground. You get that person to like you almost immediately. Then we can now move on to negotiations or presenting
right.
a deal.
You know, and what's interesting too is the book is almost a blueprint, not only to as far as getting people to like you and to be more persuasive, but really as a formula for building charisma.
Yeah, it is, because you know it's ironic is that you know most people say we want to do things to other people to get them to like us, and you know what the irony is, if we put the other person first, focus on the other person, focus on their needs and what they want. And then they will like us, and then they will be able to negotiate in goodwill for you know towards us, and actually want to achieve their goals along with you know maintaining a relationship with us. That's one of the things important in the book is the friendship golden rule of friendship, and that is if you want people to like you, you make them feel good about themselves, and it works this way because if I make somebody feel good about themselves, they're going to want to come back and see me again to get that same good feeling. They will actually think up excuses to come back and see you again. So if you're a salesperson and you develop this relationship by putting other people first, then that other person is going to want to come back and do business with you again. It's actually it's a goodwill tool. And the way we can do that is with empathic statements. It's a very simple technique. And all you have to do is take what that person said, how they feel, or their physical status or emotional status, and use parallel words and mirror it back to them. So if somebody looks very happy that day, you'll say, looks like you're having a good day. And you start with the word so you. That's a simple construction of a empathic statement, because so you keeps it the focus on the other person. And then when you get used to saying so you, then you can drop the so you, and then it becomes a more sophisticated empathic statement. And people like when the focus is on them, and it makes them feel good.
Absolutely. It reminds me of in marketing, we have a sales copy technique called so you can. So, you know, it's a benefit statement tie-in type thing. So buy this product so you can achieve these results. And back to that whole so you that you're talking about.
Yeah, basically what we want to do is, you know, I look at a business proposition, or even you're going to complain to somebody at a store to get a product fixed. The whole proposition is you want to make that as easy as possible, and you want to present yourself as non-threatening, and you want to get people to like you almost instantly. And then once they like you, they will bend over backwards to help you. And most people make that mistake. They try to use force, or you know, try to overpower somebody, especially when you're making a complaint at the store and you're saying, I want this and I want that. The other person, of course, is going to be on the defense. So one of the ways you can change that whole paradigm is if you walk up to somebody you're going to make a complaint with, or you're in a business deal, you want to send off what I call friend signals. And there's basically three friend signals. The first friend signal is the eyebrow flash. That's a long-distance signal that tells the other person, I'm not a threat. And it's a quick up and down movement of the eyebrows. It lasts about 1/64 of a second. Most people don't realize they're doing that when they meet people. It's kind of fun after it's kind of fun after I do seminars, and people will come back and say, I can't believe I've been eyebrow flashing my whole life and I didn't know it. This is incredible. I see tons of eyebrow flashes. And they're going like, this is amazing. I go, yeah, this is what we do normally when we tell each other. And the example I like to use, if you meet someone the first time in the morning, you always say, hey, how you doing? The second time you meet them, you don't say, hey, how you doing? What do? You eyebrow flash each other. And that's just a distance nonverbal signal that says, I'm not a threat. And guys often will do the chin thing. They'll jut their chin out and upward. And guys typically do that. And it's the same thing as a friend signal. The second thing is a head tilt. When you tilt your head to the right or to the left, you expose your carotid artery. And that simply tells the other person, you know, I'm not a threat, and I don't see you as a threat because I'm exposing a very vulnerable part of my body. You know, I notice that. I tell people to go home and watch their pets. As soon as you walk in the door, your dog will do what? It'll tilt its head to one side or the other. And all that is telling you, I'm not a threat. And oftentimes that dog will flip over on its back and exposing its stomach, and that just is another friend signal that says, I'm not a threat, and I don't consider you a threat because I'm exposing the most vulnerable part of my body. So it's kind of interesting with the head tilt. And in business meetings, most guys will keep their head erect, and they won't tilt it to one side or other, and that's a sign of dominance. And it's good, I guess, in a boardroom situation, but when the same people then go out into the social situations and they don't tilt their head, people get the sense that there's something wrong with that guy. I don't know what it is, but I just don't like that guy. Well, that's because his head is erect. He should make an attempt to men should make an attempt to tilt their heads when they meet people socially. The last thing is the eyebrow flash, the head tilt, and the smile. The one thing about the smile is that what happens to us when we smile, we release endorphins, and that makes us feel good about ourselves. So when we smile at somebody, we make them feel good because they're smiling, and when the other person smiles, they get a shot of endorphins, and then therefore we make them feel good about themselves when we smile. And that falls back to the golden rule of friendship. If you make someone else feel good about themselves, then they're going to like you. So those are the three friend signals you want to make sure that you display when you meet people in all social settings, just to let them know I'm not a threat and I like you.
You know, what's interesting about listening to these friend signals that you're describing is it goes to show you, as sophisticated or as intelligent as we are as beings, that in some levels we're no different than our dogs or our animals or the animals out in the jungle, right? There's a certain body language that we naturally adhere to.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm pointing out in the like switch. I'm pointing out these very subtle things that people don't realize what they're doing. And once you realize, oh, I can do this, and I do this with job seekers, you know. I tell my students, when you're going into a job interview, naturally you're going to be nervous. You're going to be, you know, excited and nervous and tense. Well, that's nothing more than a fight-flight response. So when your body experiences a fight-flight response, it doesn't issue eyebrow flashes. It doesn't issue that head tilt. You don't smile naturally. And that's the problem when you go in to meet somebody, when you're intense like that. So I tell my students to go in for the job interviews, make sure you eyebrow flash. Make sure you head tilt. Make sure you smile. And if you can't smile naturally, there's a way you can smile that looks natural, and that is your brain picks up the crow's feet or the wrinkling around the corners of your eye. And so if you make sure your cheeks are upraised a little bit and you crinkle your eyes, then the other person's brain will think that's a natural smile versus a fake smile. So those are the things you can do intentionally if you're in a nervous situation. And people often forget about those signals, because if I meet you and you don't send me friend signals, subconsciously I'm going to say, I don't know, there's something wrong with that guy. I don't know what it is, but I just don't like him. And that's a bad way to start a job interview or a sales meeting.
Yeah, that's interesting. That is so interesting. And this whole thing, it sounds, I want to talk about this because it sounds kind of funny, but this thing that you talked about, this emotion, this likable emotion, you know, if people like you, they're going to come back to you and they're going to want to do business with you. That is what all advertising comes down to for the most part, especially when you see these, I'll focus on the Super Bowl commercials. The Super Bowl commercials are trying to make us laugh, as you mentioned, smile at least. And if we're smiling when we see that product, whether it's a beer or a cheese or an internet product, we're going to associate good feelings with that product, and that's half the battle. If we like that product, if we have good feelings with that product, we're going to be more apt to trust them and therefore give them our money.
That's exactly true. So that's what all commercials try to do, is they try to stir either stir a strong emotion, and it's scary, then it works the same way. Because if you show something like unexpected or scary in your commercial, then people will take note of that, and they'll misattribute that feeling to a good feeling. You know, it's the same thing that when soldiers are in battle or cops are in battle or, you know, in street situations, in dangerous situations.
Sure.
They form a bond. You know, they call that the band of brother bond. And that's what happens, because when we face traumatic situations, then we form a bond together. And that's what commercials try to do. They either try to scare you or try to introduce some kind of humor. And the other thing, of course, is the sex angle.
Yeah, this is such an interesting book. It's called The Like Switch, and we are basically out of time, so I'm going to have to bring you back, because I want to dive into this a little bit deeper, because this is something, as we've already talked about, it's good for business, it's good for job interviews, it's good for your relationship with your children or your spouse, it's good across the board, and these are skills that sometimes we're not aware that we can activate them when we need them, for lack of better terms.
Yeah, and there's also ways in the book that we can test for rapport. In other words, you know, we don't necessarily make our sales pitch unless we know that the rapport has been established. And in the book, we explain how you can tell that rapport has been established.
I love it. I love it. Jack Schaefer. The book, again, is The Like Switch by Jack Schaefer, former behavioral analyst for the FBI. It's a great book. Check it out. Jack Schaefer, we'll have you back again soon, my friend. Thank you so much for stopping by.
All right. Thank you.
Good stuff there from Jack Schaefer, Richard Serber, and Tom Hopkins. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.